Are you a rural farming woman, wife or mother, struggling to find peace in your busy life? Do you find yourself trying to squeeze joy out of your daily routine, manage stress that seems never-ending, and somehow reconnect with your passions in the midst of it all? Do you love your rural life, yet often feel overwhelmed by the challenges it brings? Welcome to Cultivate Contentment, the podcast designed just for you. I'm Jessica Knight, a fellow rural woman, wife and mother, and I get it. I've been there. Right there in the trenches, juggling the demands of farm life, motherhood, and carving out moments to take care of myself. Come along with me and my guests as we explore balancing farm life with personal needs on a realistic level. Practical ways to sprinkle a little joy and peace into your daily routine, nurturing relationships without losing your sense of self, and how to keep stress at bay and prevent burnout, all while staying focused on what we really want, feeling content and settled in our lives. So whether you're savouring a cup of coffee before the morning chaos begins, stealing a moment of quiet on your drive to town, or popping in your earbuds while wrestling with laundry and dishes, I invite you to join me. Let's laugh, learn, and cultivate contentment together. Welcome to Cultivate Contentment. Today, I'm very excited to be joined by a guest. Zoe is passionate about holistic wellness and personal growth. She's dedicated to holistic health guides with a background in naturopathy and emotional release technique. She's committed to empowering women and mothers to thrive physically, mentally, and emotionally. She does this through one-on-one sessions, group programs, and compassionate support. Zoe guides her clients through emotional clearing and nervous system regulation whilst teaching them about the fundamental pillars of health and helping them cultivate vibrant well-being in every aspect of their lives. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Tell us a little about you, where you're based, anything you want to share about sort of your life in general and how you ended up running the business that you are.
Oh, yeah, sure. So I was born and raised in Southwest Sydney, like right in suburban, you know, not the city, but in the suburbs. And I always loved rural living. My cousins lived on a farm in the Central Coast, a bit north. And my favourite things was going there for school holidays and, you know, chasing the chickens and picking the oranges out of their orchard and all that sort of stuff. And my heart always lived in the bush. And I grew up motorbike riding and often going places with my parents as well. And so I was always very connected to nature, and I was a tomboy being outside. Even on our suburban block, I was always in the backyard with my neighbour running around, pretending to be spies and things. So I didn't spend a lot of time indoors, you know, playing with dolls or anything like that. I was always very out in nature, in the bush. That passion for nature and natural living sort of grew with me into my late teen years when I sort of started, you know, I might wear a bit of makeup to go out with friends and things, and I would always react to it and my eyes would get puffy. And always being the very curious, I always said if I was a cat, I would have used all of my nine lives very early in life because I always had to know everything. And so with that curiosity, I was like, why is this happening to me? Why does no one else get this? What is causing it? And so that sort of started me researching and diving deep into natural skincare products and makeup and things like that. You know, I always remember my poor mother having to put up with me. She'd say, okay, I'm going shopping. I'd be like, oh, I'm going to come. And I'd be there reading the back of packets and the ingredients going, oh, we can't get this one, Mum, you know, it's got palm oil. We're going to kill the orangutans. And she'd roll her eyes and, you know, here we go. And, you know, so I was always very passionate about, you know, the various like natural things and what's good for our health, good for the planet health and all of that sort of stuff. That became a lot more prominent for me when I met my to-be husband, my boyfriend, and then we wanted to start settling down and looking to get pregnant and start a family. It wasn't just about my health anymore. You know, I was that forward-thinking thing, okay, well, how can I have the best pregnancy that I can have, the best birth that I can have, the most healthiest child? And what does that look like? How can I, you know, support that to happen? And so that really deepened my, you know, interest in going further and further into natural living and health and all of that. Yeah, that's kind of where my story started. And then where the rubber really hit the road was once I had learned, I changed my diet and all of that. And I had a few little health struggles that weren't huge. I would get urinary tract infections really often. And before I really understood natural health, I worked at a chemist. So I'd just go to my boss and be like, oh, you know, can I get some antibiotics? He'd be like, oh yeah, got another urinary tract infection. Yep. He'd write to his brother-in-law, who was a doctor, who I also worked for. They'd write me a script. They'd get the script over. I'd get the antibiotics. I'd take the antibiotics. Then I'd have to, you know, the cascade of effects that when you take a pharmaceutical, there's always going to be a side effect. So then I'd have to take, you know, the thrush cream because I got thrush from the antibiotics and so on like that. And, you know, eventually started tweeting to me, hang on, I changed my diet and I actually haven't had a urinary tract infection for ages. Actually, I changed this and this and that and my stomach hasn't hurt for ages. Like it, these things that I just thought were a normal part of life for me, I was like, oh, wow, that's not actually normal. It's very common, but it's not normal. And my life can be a lot stronger and healthier and happier than what I thought it could be. So I was a teacher. I have always loved learning, always loved teaching and sharing what I learn. And it started out as being a primary school or early childhood educator. I loved the younger kids, you know, or in primary school. But when I had my first son, I really couldn't face going back because it was very constricting. Being within that structure and that system of a government department, a lot of red tape. And me being me, I didn't just go, okay, well, that's one way I can teach them. What about this way I could teach them? And, you know, going down all the different paths of what's best for these kids and not being allowed to do most of them because it didn't fit within the guidelines of what the government says you should be doing or what the principal said I should be doing, you know. And I was often the one called out being told, you know, you can't teach like that. Stop letting the kids have their shoes off inside the classroom. Don't let them out to play too often because, you know, I had a classroom full of unruly boys who needed to stop every half an hour and I'd let them run out in the grass on the side of my classroom because I saw their needs in that and I was trying to support them, but it doesn't fit within that paradigm. So I really couldn't go back to that, but I would have because I couldn't sort of lift my eyes up and see outside of that 9 to 5, have a job, support the family, this is what you do. Particularly when you have a mortgage in Sydney, it's not that easy to get by on only one salary. But my husband, the lovely man that he is, doesn't see, you know, a stop to anything. He's just like, do it. Okay, what do you want to do? Oh, you love natural, like go study to be a naturopath. And I was like, oh, I can do that. And so that's where my journey of actually, you know, studying and, you know, changing career and changing life began as well. And that's how I sort of fell into this business as well after having my first.
I love those husbands that go, yeah, of course you can do that. Just go ahead. No problems. We'll figure it out. They're great, those
yes,
ones.
Yes. Oh, they really are. I'm so blessed to have him.
I love your relation to that there is a place for modern medicine, but is there a different way of looking at things so that we don't need to take unnecessary medicine? I know that I've taken so many antibiotics over the years of being pregnant and getting mastitis repeatedly and then looking and going, well, yes, I can treat the mastitis, but why am I getting it? What's the reason yes. behind it so that I don't have to take these antibiotics? So as a starting point for women that are going, yeah, this sounds really familiar. I can really relate to this. I know that you talk a lot about the foundational pillars of health. And so would you say that's a starting point?
Yes, definitely. I would say it's almost a starting and an end point because, you know, I often speak about how we love specializing in things or pinpointing the one thing. Like if your stomach's sore, you're like, oh, it's gut health, and you'll find someone who specializes in the gut, or you might go and see your doctor will say, right, you need to go see, you know, a specialist in the gut. Like a gastroenterologist or whatever. You know, we within modern medicine and even within natural medicine, a lot of naturopaths and nutritionists and things will specialize in a very particular part of our body systems. Whilst that can be really helpful because you really get that focus on the ins and outs, often it leads to ignoring the rest of the body. And, you know, we're not just a gut walking around. We're not just a part of us walking around completely separate to everything else. I even see a holistic dentist and he'll have often heard him say, you know, we're not just a mouth walking around, not connected to everything, you know? So if your dentist isn't asking you about your breathing and your sleep and your diet, then you should really find a new dentist or, you know, find someone that can help you with that stuff as well. Because really our health, our body is completely interconnected. And so our health is, and so everything we do to support our health has to be interconnected and touching on these fundamental pillars. And so that is what I've learned. You know, as a naturopath, I really started out learning about, okay, diet, this is what you should be eating, and then herbals and supplements. You know, this is how we can support you to be healthy. And then from those studies, it really branched out. And again, my curiosity has served me well in life. You know, I was like, well, what about, you know, this stuff? Or why is diet working for some people, but others, it's not working at all? You know, they've still got these symptoms that they're having problems with. And This really came about, and if you don't mind, I'll tell a bit of the story of my birth story. I've shared it on podcasts before, but my broadening of my, you know, understanding of health up to these fundamental pillars came from the birth of my first, and I had a lot of birth trauma around that. I used to go see a chiro, you know, because we, again, separated out physical health. I see my chiro, I'll get adjusted, go once a month. At the time, knew a bit about energy healing and emotional health and stuff. And she said, look, you're coming to me every month and you're coming with the same problem and I'm not helping you. I think it's emotional. I was like, what do you mean emotional? Like, he was a bit of a tough baby, loving to pieces, but it was a rough couple of years, introduction to motherhood. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm pretty stressed and sleep deprived, but what's that got to do with my shoulders and my back? She was like, I think you need to see my colleague. He does emotional healing. I think you should go and see him. So I was like, okay. So I went and saw him and it blew my mind, like completely healed so many different things that I didn't even know were related to each other or had an emotional underpinning. And it really opened my eyes to, okay, being really super strict on my diet is not the be all and end all. It was a really, you know, fantastic eye opener. And then I found my mentor in ERT that I do. And she had a naturopathic version of what my chiro was doing. And it sort of just snowballed from there where I started realizing that diet, emotions, sunlight, sleeping, all of these different pillars come together. And that is how we really get vibrant, consistent health, you know, without those ups and downs and without those niggling things that aren't getting fixed. It's because we're not looking at one of those pillars. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was the side of my journey into like the emotional side of stuff as well.
So can we dive into what all the pillars are?
Yeah,
for those who haven't sort of had much in this area before.
Yeah. So obviously the big one that a lot of people first go to is diet. And the thing is, there's no one diet or even a diet paradigm that I can say is the one that everyone should be eating. You know, when people say, oh, I turned vegan and it was the best thing ever and all these health things resolved, or I turned carnivore or insert diet name here. Usually the big thing that is similar with all of these diets is that they've stopped eating a lot of ultra processed food. They've started cooking at home more. It's a lot fresher, maybe even more local to their area. You know, they might start talking to their farmers and going to markets and things. So it's a lot more alive, the food that they're eating. And so really that's the underpinning of what a diet should look like. It's not about exactly like what you're eating in terms of like which vegetables or which meat or, you know, the ratios of your macronutrients and things like that. It's a lot more around eating fresh whole foods that are local and in season to you, cooking at home with love, because again, everything is interconnected. We're not just eating, you know, food that's dead, that's being bought from the shops pre-prepared. We're cooking it with love in our home with the connection of our family and for someone that we care for. That brings a lot more to the table than a lot of people realize. So these pillars themselves are even interconnected. So diet's not just a standalone thing. I can fix that and then we'll be done. It's the bringing in of all the pillars. So yes, diet is one. Hydration, very linked to diet, but is a pillar standing on its own. Looking at not just the amount of water, but the type of water, where you're sourcing it, you know, making sure you've got minerals put back in. Also looking at the other connected pillars, because if you're just gulping down heaps and heaps of water without having the nutrients to be able to, you know, assimilate it properly, without having that love and connection and the sunlight with the energy, like it's a lot altogether. So diet, hydration, sleep and rest, looking at quantity and quality of sleep can be hard for us mums with little kids. I had a shocker last night. I have a 2-year-old and she's got a bit of a sniffle at the moment. And so I think we're up like 4 or 5 times, but it's seasons of life. And this is also why the pillars are so important, because if I wasn't, you know, looking at all my other pillars here, that one night of bad sleep that I've gotten now, and again, she's 2. So it only happens, you know, we'll get a handful of nights and then we'll have some good ones. I'm not in that newborn stage where it's really all over the shop. But, you know, if I wasn't focusing on these other pillars, then that 1 or 2 nights would wipe me out and write me off for the day. And so when we are looking at these pillars, we can really uphold our health a lot easier without one blow cutting us down. And within that one, that pillar of sleep, rest is really important as well. And this is where like a lot of the self-care activities, you know, when someone says, oh, you're doing self-care and you think of candles in a bath or maybe, you know, coffee or warm drink and reading a book, like they're lovely. But then again, self-care isn't just like those things. Self-care is doing all the pillars, but self-care often fits into that sleep and rest. Taking that few minutes, that half an hour, that hour, whatever you can spare from the kids and the hubby and the farm and the whatever else, that rest time interspersed throughout your day and your week is just as important as getting the quality sleep, because it means that you're taking that time to slow down. Connection. Connection is so important. And it's not just like when we think of connection, we might think of relationships. So, you know, to your partner or to your kids, which is really lovely. And we want to look at our relationships and make sure that we're, you know, fostering ones that really light us up and allow ourselves to be our authentic self, where we don't have that mask on. And because that takes a lot of energy to have a mask on and be play acting what we think people around us need. So really fostering really authentic and lovely relationships, but also that connection to yourself, because you can't have that authentic relationship with others around you without having it with yourself. And this is a huge thing that I work on with my clients as well, is really peeling back these layers of programming that we've had throughout our lives, the people pleasing, the good girl stuff, to really start to get to our inner authentic self. Because actually, when we work from that place, all of our other connections, relationships, all of the other parts of our life fall into line and are a lot more easeful than when we're trying to come from a place of people pleasing, because we're just going to be sitting there in resentment and things like that as well. That it's not a nicer energy to be coming from. And of course, connection to our world, to nature, you know, being out in the garden or with the animals. I think us rural ladies get a chance at that a bit easier than others because we're often out on the land.
Yes.
I know myself this morning, our bull got out. So, you know, I was out at 5:30 walking him back into the paddock with my husband, you know. So that is often a bit of an easier tick for us. But, you know, just even being out in the veggie garden and stuff like that, really being thankful for what nature can bring us and the connection we have with it. That's a lovely one as well. Movement, of course. And, you know, many people will say, okay, exercise, go to the gym, you know, an hour off, tick, I'll do that. But movement really encompasses a lot more than that. It is how we move within our environment on the day to day. So, you know, are you sitting down a lot in that, you know, 90 degree angle, legs on the floor, slouched in the seat sort of thing, at office chair or at the dining chair or at the lounge room?
Sitting in the tractor.
Sitting in the house, exactly. Yeah. We don't have a tractor, but we have a little old Suzuki Vitara, you know, sitting in the car around the paddocks, you know. So if you're doing that, then maybe looking at modifying your environment. So, you know, if you know that you have to sit in the tractor for a few hours or however long that day, then trying to get a standing desk to work at the office to do the numbers later in the afternoon. Or, you know, our dining room table has actually had its legs cut off and it's a low down sort of like oriental style one. So we sit cross-legged on cushions or on stumps just to get more movement and to keep our bodies supple and strong. I want to be getting into my 70s and my 80s, still being able to get down on my hands and knees with my grandkids and great-grandkids and all of that. And if I'm not practicing that now, why do I think I'd be able to do it then? It's a bit unconventional. It's a bit weird. People come into the house and they're like, oh, this is interesting. But it's for me. It's not for anyone else. And, you know, I know that I'm going to appreciate it when I'm older and can still do all of those things.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's about looking at that movement on the overall. You know, we have a lounge. I'm not saying get rid of all your furniture. But, you know, I do have a standing desk here where I'm working now that I can put up and down. Yeah, I do try and walk as much as I can. So, yeah, that movement piece isn't just about, you know, the strength of cardio training within the gym or an exercise program or something like that. It encompasses everything you're doing on the daily. Breathing, air and breathing. Those ones we can be looking at a couple of different things. First off, looking at, you know, your air quality. And again, we're pretty lucky out here. I know your audience is mostly rural women like we are, and we have lovely air quality, you know, we can still look up at the stars at night and actually see most of them rather than when I used to live. I think I missed that part of my story. So we did move out rural from Sydney about 6 years ago. So yeah, we live on 180 acres now. But you know, it's so lovely to be able to, yes, look up at the sun, at the sky, at night, wherever, and see just beautiful, clear sky.
Yes.
Without the pollution and things like that. So air quality, but it's not just about the air quality of, you know, your environment that you have no control over, whether you're in the city or wherever. It's about within your home. So it's looking at the toxins, you know, so the cleaning products you use, air fresheners, clothing, fabric softeners and things like that. So all of those are putting out toxins or chemicals into your air. So the air quality you're breathing is related to that stuff as well. And how we breathe is really important. The vast majority of us, you know, a lot of us are mouth breathers, might have blocked stuffy noses from constant inflammation and things like that, or we're just, you know, bad habits from childhood, you know. And if we're breathing a lot through our mouth, we're actually setting off our stress response in our brain. And so our brain is in like, oh my God, there's something chasing us and we're in fear for our lives. And it's that setting off like hyperventilating. And so we really should be breathing through our noses only, really slowly, you know, diaphragmatic breathing kind of thing. But there's a lot that goes into that. You know, it's more than what I can put on here. There's a lot that neurologically goes on. There's a lot of retraining that has to happen with that. But it is a really important pillar of the health. Definitely something to be looking at for anyone who's, you know, listening to this, sitting there going, oh, yeah, I breathe through my mouth. Or, yeah, like I'm, if you've got anxiety or you've got that constant feeling of like, can't, like restlessness and, you know, something's going to go wrong, then there's a breathing element definitely that you need to be looking at there. And the seventh is sun and light. So we have evolved, you know, and grown up with, you know, as a human being race, not us ourselves, but as human beings, we have evolved and grown up with the sunlight being our main source of light. And so it's waves that we're getting through, the range going from red to blue over the whole course of the day are really important signals to our body. It's information that our body's getting around its circadian rhythm and the times to be most active and the most on and most energetic versus getting ready to go to sleep and recharge and rest and our body winding down. And so when we're up first thing in the morning with, you know, maybe the telly on or looking at our phones to check what's going on for the day or answering messages and looking at that last thing at night as well or watching the TV straight before bed, then we're sending completely wrong information. So, you know, if you're sitting here thinking, oh, when I was talking about sleep, yeah, I can never get to sleep at night. I'm always just laying there wide awake and wired. It could possibly be to do with the light information that you're getting, you know, because whilst your body's saying, wow, I've had a big day, I've done all the things, I'm physically tired, the light information you're getting is going, hey, it's time to wake up, get going, you know, get ready for the day, because it's getting this blue light from the screens. And so the light we're looking at throughout the day, we have to be mindful of that as well and how that affects our circadian rhythm and stuff. So that was the last pillar. The way I like to look at it is that these are the pillars. So if we're, you know, we're building a house, then we have to have these strong pillars, these walls that are going to be holding up our ceiling, up the roof, holding the place strong to keep us safe with inside it. But the other important aspect of building a house is the foundation. And what I see as the foundation of our health is our emotional and mental capacity. Our nervous system, and that's where the nervous system comes into this, is holding on to a lot of programming and trauma and emotions that we experience throughout our lives that we haven't processed properly or that we've kept on as a safety mechanism. And when that's a bit wobbly, when maybe we have a bit of a lack of self-belief or, you know, as I said, those programming around people-pleasing or the good girl stuff, then that wobbly foundation, no matter how good we've got these fundamental pillars going, they're going to be a bit rocky as well. Those fundamental pillars are holding up the ceiling and then the foundation is holding up everything. And that's where I do a lot of my work with my clients around the mental and emotional aspects of health and disease.
So you've got a rural woman listening to this going, gosh, that all sounds great, but they have a very perfectionist personality and they see those ads for those quick fixes that are going to say, follow this diet or follow this exercise routine. And they look at those seven pillars and go, gosh, no, I couldn't do that because if I can't do them all right, there's no point. Where's the starting place for that woman?
Yes. Great question. These seven pillars with the foundation of emotional health, like that's too much. I want this quick fix pill. Firstly, the quick fix pills are great and you'll probably see results, you know, and that's why they sell and people will say they're so great and you can get results. But the difference is you might see results for a short amount of time and then you'll go back to old habits. Or you'll see results with one bit of your symptoms that you're having, but there'll be other symptoms that just never resolve and never get any better. Or you'll get to a certain point where everything's great and then everything falls off and you're even worse than what you were beforehand because the quick fix was actually doing a lot of suppression rather than healing because our body's really good at surviving. It just wants to survive and have offspring and then like at the base level, we're animals and that's what we're built to do. And so if it needs to suppress some stuff to just keep going and survive through the next thing, then it will do that. But everything will come back like a lot worse sometimes. You know, it's like when people have, or women have issues with their cycle when they're young girls and they go to the doctor and the doctor says, go on the pill, it'll fix all your problems. And then later in life, they come off the pill and they have trouble falling pregnant and all their pain and symptoms and all that come back way worse than they were when they first went on. It's because the pill is not fixing anything. It's just suppressing everything, telling the body, don't worry about any of that, ignore it, move on with life. And the body goes, okay. And then when it comes off the body, it's like, well, here's all these problems again. Everything's worse than ever because we've just suppressed it for the last 10, 15 years. And so that's what sometimes these quick fixes are doing as well. And that's what the pill is. It's just a quick fix. You will feel better. You might look better. The symptoms might be gone, but your body's not actually done any healing. It's not actually done any repairing of what the actual problem is. You haven't got to the root cause. And so things won't actually stay better for the long term. And so then the good news with doing these pillars, it might take a little while. It might be a little bit of extra effort, but a lot of them are actually really simple. I'm not going to say easy because, you know, any change in life, change is one of the hardest things we do as humans. We love continuity and familiarity and just staying in the same, even if it means that, you know, we're in pain or things are happening. We consciously think we want to change, but when it comes to it, it can actually be really hard because of our nervous system programming. And so making these changes can be really daunting, especially when I say, hey, there's seven pillars of health that you need to be looking at. But really, you could be doing each of these seven pillars at 10, 20% just to start with, and you're still going to see big shifts. You don't have to do all of them absolutely perfectly. I think that's where a really big shift in our mindset around this has to come. Because when a lot of people, and I know this is how I sort of started in the health world as well, when I very first learned about diet, it was like, okay, I am so strict with diet. Like my poor family around me, especially when my son was born, because, you know, first mama bear trials, like it was like, don't feed him that. Don't give him that. No, sorry, we can't come out for dinner. They use seed oils and all these additives. And I was so strict. And really the stress around it was probably just as bad for me, you know. And anyone who has sort of started down this line where it's like, okay, well, right, I've got to be so strict on this. And then it's like, oh, well, is that even life? Like, is that even living? And then you fall off the bandwagon, you binge eat all the chocolate, you go out to the pub and, you know, like this, it's not sustainable. Doing each of these pillars at 100% is not sustainable. It's not fun. It's not enjoyable. And it is not going to be as good for your health as just doing each of them at like 10, 20%. And eventually when you start feeling better, you'll start going, oh, well, I can do that one at 40% now. Oh, I feel even better. Okay, I'll do that one at 40% too. And you sort of just build your way up. And if you're really looking, and this is why I work a lot with the foundation, with doing the ERT and the emotional release and looking at that mindset part, because when we have that stronger foundation, building those walls up 5, 10% at a time on each of those fundamental pillars is so much easier and so much more sustainable and enjoyable, you know, rather than thinking we have to be that perfect 100% go, go, go all time with all of them.
I can relate so much to that because I do have that perfectionist personality, and I know that I've done those diets and you go, yeah, like for 6 months, you see such dramatic changes. And then all of a sudden, like you see, you just fall off the wagon and it all goes downhill and you end up even worse than what you were. And you go, well, what's the point in trying again? I failed it at that time. But starting from, you said, that foundation point and building up from it and doing it gradually and sustainably, I think is definitely the key.
Yes, definitely, definitely. When you see something like it, it's like, okay, it's a 6 month diet plan. And then it's like, well, what's after that? So I teach all of the pillars and I have a lot of support. It goes for 12 months, my program that I do these pillars with and work with my clients with and that. And, you know, I say to them, you don't stop after that. You know, this is just for life and you're learning bits and pieces that you just integrate into your day-to-day life, little habits that you pick up. And, you know, it's not 12 months and then stop. I got 3 out of the 4 clients I'm doing it with this year actually did it with me last year as well, you know, because they can see that it's just like an ongoing, oh yeah, we'll add a bit of this one now and then oh, we'll do a bit of that. And it's very slow and gradual change and process, because when you try and shove a thing like a 30-day or 6-month plan and then the support drops away and there's nothing left and it's like you just go back to your old habits because it's not really habit forming and changing because you're trying to change everything at once.
Yes.
So yeah, it's really those little bits and showing yourself that you've got a bit of success as well, you know, and not in a unsustainable way.
So you've mentioned a few times that nervous system regulation. So explain, I guess, what does a regulated nervous system look like and what's an unregulated one look like? Because I know from being a mother to young children that there are those moments where everything just flows over and you're losing it, and it's not at them, it's really inside you that's the problem.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I'll just do a little like quick thing on what the nervous system is and what its function is. And then we'll look, that regulated and dysregulated. So basically our nervous system's just running the whole show, right? It's telling all of our organs and systems what to do. It's constantly feedbacking like what's happening externally and what's happening internally and just like sending messages everywhere and running everything. It's also constantly like basically recording. It's just a ongoing 24/7, 365 recorder, taking in all the different senses and remembering everything that's ever happened. So a lot of this programming, like we come into life not as blank slates. I don't believe that. I've had three kids of my own now as a teacher before. I've seen the kids have their own very specific personality from the get-go. But in the first 7 years or so, they're very much learning how to fit their personality into the world that they've been born into, into the family they've been born into, the society, the culture, where they play a part and how they're supposed to act and respond. And so those first 7 years are really pivotal. It doesn't matter if you've come from the most loving, beautifully caring, nurturing family, or if you've experienced a lot of trauma and abuse or somewhere in between, your nervous system is still being programmed at that cellular level, at that level of like taking in everything and learning how to respond. And as children, they don't have the emotional maturity, I guess you could say, to understand nuance and, you know, the gray area in between things. So when they feel a feeling, it's 100%. You know, we see it in the tantrums. They didn't get something they want. It's full 100% emotion, whatever it is. Anger, sadness, you know, whatever they're feeling at the time. And there's also an internalization of the meaning of what's happening to them. So, you know, if mum says, no, like, I don't have time for you right now, just be quiet. They could internalize, oh, it's not safe for me to be seen and heard. I'm not worthy of being seen and heard, so I need to be quiet. Always, forever and ever, you know. And so this can be internalized as an unworthiness of our voice and opinion to be heard. And that can look like many different things as an adult. You know, we might be shy or we might not go and follow our passions and business ideas and things because we're too scared that people are going to bring us down. All because of that one or two incidents as a child that we've internalized, oh, my voice isn't to be heard. I need to be quiet. And our parents, you know, we've all would have said it to our kids. I've said it to my kids. They never mean it like that, but it's just how the child's processed and internalized it. And those first 7 years are really pivotal to that programming. You know, and when I do a lot of my work with my one-on-one clients outside of my big program where it's all just emotional and mindset work, I can do primary origin where we look at, okay, where did this emotion first get stuck in your nervous system and where's this pattern coming from? And the vast majority of time, it is sort of like that 0 to 7 time or from teen years, about 12 to 16-ish is again another very pivotal time, especially for us women, you know, moving from primary to high school. There's a lot going on there for us. And so these moments get stuck in our nervous system and they inform everything we do as adults. As children, we also often never really learn how to process our emotions. Children are often mostly regulated. You know, they feel the emotion, they express it, they get it all out of their system, and then they move on. And that's actually quite regulated, you know, to feel the emotion, acknowledge it, express it, done with it, and move on. But as adults, we don't often let kids do that. You know, it's uncomfortable. It's hard as a parent. You don't want to see your child in pain or upset or anything like that. And so, you know, they get, it's okay, honey, darling, don't worry, come here. Like, shh, shh, be quiet. It's okay, don't cry. Look, I'll get you a new one. Or look, here's the teddy. The teddy will make you happy. Or the lolly or the TV. Or, you know, it's distract them. When it seems like coming from a very loving place, we don't want them to be hurt. And we would have had this done to us as children as well. But again, it's that shutting down of don't cry, don't feel your emotion, don't show your emotion, don't express your emotion. And so emotion is energy in motion, emotion, and it has to be moved. You know, and often that's why you'll see, particularly boys, they are movement focused and girls usually, sometimes not. But, you know, they'll have to run or they'll have to punch and kick or bash something up, throw. You know, my boys love throwing stuff. And that's that energy in motion. It's the movement, the crying, the expressing, all of that. It needs to happen. It's just very hard to sit with sometimes. And so it's pushed down. It's ignored to a certain extent, you know, suck it back in, ignore it, like don't feel it, show that you're happy. It's all good.
Yes.
And then that gets stuck there in the nervous system. And so if you can think of, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years of doing that because we don't want to make people around us uncomfortable, you can imagine how many layers of emotion we have stuck there that has never been processed out of our nervous system. And then that's when we get to be dysregulated.
I just love this because I have three boys. So there's a lot of energy in our house. There is a lot of noise. But my husband, I think, fits in there as very well regulated under this theory, because if something annoys him, he goes out to the paddock, he goes out to the shed, he does something where he can do some hammering and get it all out, and then he comes back in and he's like all happy again. So I feel he's very well regulated.
Yes. Yes, definitely. And that's part of the regulator. Like, you know, as a mother, so this is the dysregulated, right? It's the constant feeling of holding it in. Like, I have to be on edge and I've got to hold myself in because otherwise I'm going to explode. And then it explodes. And as you yell at the kids and, oh, my God, and rah, 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 and then you're like, oh, and you feel guilty after and you think, I shouldn't have said that and I shouldn't have done that, and the kids are upset now when everything's falling apart, and this is, you know, and then the spiral of the words and guilty thoughts and all, like, you know, everyone has their own flavor, but generally that can be kind of what it looks like. That's dysregulated because you didn't, not control. I don't want, when I say control, I don't want, again, control is like the shoving down, like that's not control. That's a dysregulation. That's suppression and ignoring. And then losing control is the outburst, but you can feel the emotion. Oh my God, like these kids today. Okay, let's go do something about it. Like your hubby, you know, go to the shed and use the hammer and bash something up. I always say to my clients, you know, when you feel it, go to the bedroom, scream into a pillow, bash a pillow up. My middle child was the real aggressive energy. So we got in the punching bag. And so that was his job each morning, was he had to go punch the punching bag and get it all out for the morning before he even built up. You know, you had to get it out in the morning and release and diffuse that energy before anything even built up. So, you know, there's lots of different ways. I actually read on Instagram the other day a really great one, which I'm keen to try next time, was a tea towel, you know, whipping it against the kitchen bench and really getting good at that crack. So anything like that, the regulated way is to notice when you're feeling this way and go, right, let's go do something about it now. Let's move that energy through. I am feeling it. And you don't always have to name it. I think we get a bit caught up sometimes in, okay, am I feeling angry right now? Or is this like, doesn't matter, you know, like, whatever it is, you're feeling something and you can get in touch with your body. Like, okay, what do I need right now? Do I need to go bash something up with the tea towel? Because sometimes give my son sticks and go bash a tree up and they'll sword play on a tree. Or do I need to run? Or do I need to do something a bit more soothing, self-soothing? Do I need to cuddle myself? Do I need to do some yoga? Do I need to just dance? You know, dance is a great one, putting on some music, even something that will make you cry, you know, put on a sad movie or sad song and have a good cry. I think it's really good to do this stuff with or in front of the kids as well, because if they see us pushing it down, pushing it down, pushing it down, and then exploding, then that's what they're doing as well. They're just copycats, you know. We can say all we want to them and try and teach them with our words, but they don't do what we say, they do what we do, always, even when we don't want them to. So, you know, I'll often say, like, oh, no, sorry, pause, I need to go bash a punching bag, you know, or I need to go to my room for a minute, give me a moment. And, you know, sometimes even now my oldest, who's 9 now, he'll come in and go, you're a bit stressed today, Mom. And, you know, him just saying that, I'm like, yeah, you're right. Actually, I am. Give me a moment and I'll go do something about it. You know, so because sometimes we can get caught up and we'll just be in the moment. I've got to get all these things done. You're sort of out of your body, not in it, feeling it and going, oh God, yeah, I can do something about this.
How fantastic is it that he can see that? I think there is a definite change in generations of how kids are being raised and the things that we're making them aware of.
Yes, definitely. I think it's so fantastic that we can do that.
So tell me about ERT. What's the basis and how does it work?
So ERT stands for Emotional Release Technique. And basically it is a form of muscle testing. So I am surrogating myself for whoever I'm working with. So I do it over video call online. I see the person, you know, I'm sort of like an antenna. I'm tapping into their energy, into their nervous system, and I'm using muscle testing on myself to test their nervous system to see what underlying stresses there are. And so there's a real difference between our conscious and our subconscious. This is why I said, you know, it's not always important to name the feeling we're feeling, because we could name, like, you ask people to name, well, what are the feelings that you feel? They'll always be like anger, guilt, maybe embarrassment. Like, we're very limited on what we say we feel. But underneath, I have a chart here. It's got so many emotions on it. And underlying all of that, there can be lots of different ones. And there's a big difference between what we consciously think are the reasons for things, the conscious things, like the feelings that we think we're feeling, and subconsciously what's actually going on. This is partly because it's a safety mechanism. Sometimes it is feeling a lot safer and a lot more powerful to feel anger at something than it is to feel sadness or vulnerability. You know, we want to go on the, when I say like defense, it's more like aggressive defense. Like we want to attack someone first before we feel like we're attacked. We want to defend ourselves aggressively almost. And so it's a lot more powerful. We feel anger because we're not feeling heard. And this is a lot very common with mums, you know, when the kids are mucking up and they're not listening, it's because we're not feeling heard or seen. We're not feeling cared for. And that's a very vulnerable feeling. So we get angry instead. But, you know, a lot of people just go, I just want to help with my anger. It's like, okay, well, we've got to go back to when you're a child and you weren't feeling seen and heard, and we've got to clear out all those emotions instead. And everybody's different. And this is that subconscious versus conscious. So the muscle testing, the ERT, allows me to see what's going on in your subconscious that you're not aware of, to really get to the root cause of where these behaviors are coming from, where the thoughts and the feelings coming from. You know, and this is really prevalent whenever someone is trying to implement any sort of health thing, whether it's the fundamental pillars, whether it's a diet, whether it's just taking supplements, you know, or the medications that the doctor's given them. A lot of these self-sabotaging behaviors that we, you know, exhibit that, you know, oh, I forgot those supplements again. Oh my God. Or, oh no, I'm just too busy this week. I can't go to the gym. Or even sometimes pain and things in the body. It's like, oh no, I've hurt my knee. I can't go to the gym this week. They can all have emotional underpinnings because of this program we have from our childhood. If you've got something stuck there around worthiness and deservingness of being cared for, then you probably won't be taking care of yourself as an adult either. And it can be very hard to do the things that will make you healthier because of that lack of deservingness as a child that's stuck there. Oh, there's so many examples of what I see coming up in my clients, and everyone's very different, which is why having this skill to muscle test and see what's there is really cool, because we can really get to the root stuff. And often, well, the vast majority of time, people go, oh my God, yes, that makes so much sense. This happened and that happened, and I can see how that's affecting what I'm doing now. Great. And, you know, ERT is really cool because not only does it allow us to make those connections and get those insights connecting the subconscious to the conscious, but we also clear that emotion right then and there. So often with talk therapy, if anyone's tried counseling and things like that, sometimes breath work even, or other modalities where it brings up these emotions, or you talk about these events or memories and things that have happened to you, you'll feel all these emotions well up and then you're sort of stuck with them. And it's like, oh, I just kind of feel worse. You've got it all just sitting there then. And so you need to have a way to diffuse the emotion, to express it and get it out of your body. And so ERT is really cool with that, because we do that on the spot. We process it. It's cleared out of the nervous system. And then I always double check, make sure it's definitely gone. And then we can move on to the next thing and get the next insight on whatever we're working on with the client. I bring in a lot of my naturopathic stuff into my consults as well. I don't just use ERT. We talk about mindset, diet. I help my clients with information that way, and also give them exercises at home to help with emotional processing as well. So that then, again, if something else comes up for them at home, they have some tools too to work on the spot with it as well.
I think that's a really good point, because I do speak to other rural women and they say, you know, I tried a counselor, it wasn't the right fit. Or, you know, I went, but we just seemed to talk about the same stuff, or, you know, I didn't find it really helpful. And I think this is it, that they did go and they did talk about things, but they didn't actually process the emotions that are still all stuck inside.
And this is why, like, ruminating, like when we get, like, we think, oh God, you know, I've blown up at the kids again, or I've forgotten to take the supplements again, or whatever the thing is, and we get that rumination in our head, we just go over the same stuff and it's like, oh my God, I'm a bad mom or whatever. Again, everyone's got their own flavor, but whatever that rumination, it's still just sticking there in your nervous system going round and round and round and not being expressed out. Because again, that emotions, energy in motion, it needs to be moved through the body with some sort of movement or expression. Humming and vocalizing is really good as well. Writing letters, writing things out, stuff like that. So yeah, I'm all about very much empowering my clients. You know, I don't want to be relied on as the person they need to keep coming to forever and ever. I want to give them all the tools and knowledge and everything that they can use at home. And I think that's the problem with a lot of us rural women as well, because we can be so isolated. I mean, we have lovely technology these days where we can video call and I can work online from here as well. But sometimes it's just not practical. You know, the internet's down, the technology gods are not smiling on us, or we just don't have the time and stuff. Having the tools to implement in the day-to-day when we're running the farm, running with the kids and all of that is so much more beneficial than having to wait the 1 or 2 weeks to get in with someone, or, you know, sometimes even longer out rurally, you know, waiting a month to see someone to get help.
All right, Zoe. I have so many more questions. I'm going to have you come back again.
Okay.
Because this is just, there's so much more to cover still. I'll end with a question that I ask all of my guests is, what is one thing in your life at the moment that you're using to cultivate contentment? It can be a habit, a book you're reading, a new product, a daily thing, anything that's helping you cultivate contentment.
Oh, I love this question, but it's so hard because I really am, with all my learning around the fundamental pillars, I very much have a big focus on making sure I get little pockets of my day. And I've got 3 kids myself as well, and they're all very busy. So making sure that, you know, I get those pockets of time. I would say right at this moment, it's definitely reading. It's probably most of the time it's reading a book. And I just finished a book called Circe, which I love. I love like fantasy fiction, historical fiction and stuff like that. So yeah, taking time to sit with a hot chocolate and read a book is definitely my contentment time.
Ah, perfect. I love that. I'm definitely in that genre of reading with you.
Oh, I love it.
So thank you so much for joining me today. For those listeners who are wanting to learn more, wanting to reach out, where can they find you?
So my business name is Living Holistically, and it's holistically with a W. So they can jump on my website at www.livingholistically, LIVINGHOLISTICALLY.com.au. All my info is on there. I have a blog where I post a lot, and I'm also on Instagram as Living Holistically as well. They're the 2 main places. I have an email list I email out every week, just stuff that's on my mind and the goings on. And yeah, so that's where everyone can find me. And thank you so much for having me. I definitely am more than happy to come back. I love chatting. So yeah, and any of your listeners as well, if they want to reach out and have a chat too, come into my DMs or send an email. I love connecting with my audience, and I love, you know, as I said, empowering everyone. And I don't gatekeep, you know, info. I love making that community and connection as well. I think it's really important for us rural women. So.
Perfect. I will link all of the details in the show notes. I definitely recommend joining up to Zoe's newsletter. There is some great information in there. And there's also a few freebies that I've seen on her Instagram and on the website. So check those out because, yeah, sharing that information's just so wonderful. And I hope everyone has got something from this episode today. I know I definitely have, and we'll be taking away those little tips to cultivate some contentment in my daily life. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Cultivate Contentment. I hope you found inspiration and practical tips to help you on your journey towards a more contented life. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing or following the podcast on your favourite platform. And don't forget to leave a review to let me know your thoughts. For more content and community support, be sure to follow on Instagram at Grounded Farmwife. Remember, you're not alone in this journey. Together, we can continue to cultivate contentment in our lives. Until next time, take care and stay grounded.